Coming up on iOS Today, we promised you we'd do it, and we are on our way. Rosemary Orchard and I, Micah Sargent, are going to be covering Final Cut Pro and Logic Pro, which are now on iPad. Stay tuned.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is iOS Today with Rosemary Orchard and Micah Sargent, episode 656, recorded Tuesday, May 30th, 2023. Final Cut Pro and Logic Pro for iPad. This episode of iOS Today is brought to you by Grammarly Go. You'll be amazed at what you can do with Grammarly Go. Go to grammarly.com/go to download and learn more about Grammarly Go. And hey, thank you for listening. As an ad-supported network, we are always looking for new partners with products and services that will benefit our audience. With our tailored, host-read ads, you will get an authentic and proper introduction to your brand with every ad read. Visit twit.tv/advertise and launch your campaign today. Welcome back to iOS Today, the show where we talk all things iOS, iPadOS, tvOS, watchOS, HomePodOS, OS. Not SOS, just OS, operating systems. Those are the software packages, if you will, that run on the Apple devices we all know, love, and use. I am one of your hosts today, Micah Sargent.
And I am Rosemary Orchard, here ready to be playing with all of the fun things. I've been having a fun weekend, Micah. I've been giving this a try and getting generally lost in how do you edit video again anyway? And it's been great fun.
Yes, I'm so pumped about today's episode because Apple, of course, announced quite a while ago now, it feels like, the introduction of Final Cut Pro and Logic Pro for iPad. We mentioned on the show that we would be downloading them as soon as they were available, giving them a try, and then talking about them the following week. This, of course, is that following week. We're here to talk about Final Cut Pro and Logic Pro and tell you our thoughts and kind of show you how they work. These are apps that are available, interestingly, for a subscription price. You can get each of them independently for $4.99 a month or $50 a year, $49.99 a year. And you are given a 1 month free trial with each of them. So when I hopped into Final Cut Pro and Logic Pro, it worked the same. I downloaded them, I opened them, and a sort of splash screen popped up and said, hey, this has a subscription. You okay with that? I said, cool. And then it let me through saying you'll have a month to use this and kind of see if it works for you before you, you know, make the decision if this is where you want to do your video, audio, editing, mixing, mastering. I figure we'll start with Final Cut Pro. I do have Final Cut Pro here in front of me. What's great is that Apple actually provides a little project for you to start things out with. Whenever you first get the app, you will be able to download a, 385.3 megabyte file, or project rather, that includes 17 videos. So I can click the play button here and see a preview of this video.
I don't remember the last time I got to celebrate Lunar New Year in the Bay, but I'm glad I'm finally home. Lunar New Year's in the
Bay. There's this great sound in the background, all of these clips that are cut into it. And now I'm going to choose edit. Okay, so here you can see that the clip is 32 seconds long. Resolution is 3840 by 2160. It's shot in HDR at 30 frames per second. So I'll choose edit. And immediately we pop into something that I think will be familiar to folks who use Final Cut Pro. Because much like Final Cut Pro on the Mac, you get many of the same features. I'm scrubbing through this timeline and you'll notice if you're listening to this, which I guess that's everyone who's listening to this is listening to this, you can hear the audio scrubbing along. It's very impressive, given that it's happening here on this iPad. Now, let's. I'm going to take my two fingers because I've got the trackpad on my iPad. I'm going to zoom in on the timeline here so we can see some of the stuff that's going on to show you just how feature-rich this version of Final Cut Pro is. I've got a cross-dissolve transition here in my audio. I've got a fade in for this sound called Night Winds. I've got yin and yang underneath it. I could at some point add... I could expand these audio components and sort of make adjustments to it. If I choose to inspect this file, I can see here's the audio. I can change the speed of the clip, volume offset. I could pan the audio, fade in and out, voice isolation, loudness, noise removal. I could add special audio effects like a single band EQ or a compressor. And let me pop out of here. It even has multicam features so that if you had multiple cameras set up like we have here in the studio and you're recording video and they all have the same time codes, Final Cut can sort of lock into that and be aware. And then you're able to switch between those different cameras, like we're doing here, and be able to make that shift. So let's take a look at some of the stuff that we can do. So here we've got this Golden Gate Bridge clip, and you'll notice that they took the audio out of this Golden Gate Bridge clip, and then they have the voiceover. So I'm going to right-click on this file and look at the audio components here to see that, you know, we've got the stereo audio that they removed. I could easily hit the delete key to take out this video if I didn't want it. Over here on the right, I've got a little meter that gives me the ability to scrub through frame by frame. And I'm actually using my finger in this case. So this is how you can kind of get really into the nitty and gritty, which I had mentioned before when I was thinking about using Final Cut Pro on an iPad. One thing that kind of stuck with me is I don't know how precise I'm going to be able to be on an iPad. I'm so used to using my mouse in these tiny little areas and being able to cut clips and make adjustments and move things around. And I was worried that I wouldn't be able to do the same on the iPad because you have these bigger touch targets. Well, whether you're using the Apple Pencil or you're using the little scrubber on the side, I'm able to move that frame by frame by frame and make those precise adjustments, those precise edits. You've got features like snapping, positioning clips in different parts of the timeline, being able to, again, do audio scrubbing, which I'm going to turn off for the sake of this audio podcast. There's titling that we've got built in. Ultimately, Rosemary, what we're looking at here is an incredibly kitted out, near identical to the Mac copy of Final Cut Pro. And I think that's what's amazed me the most about this is how much they were able to pack into it to make it familiar to folks who've been using the Mac version of this for so long. There's one quick thing I'll mention, and I want to hear from you on this. There's also the ability with the iPad. I've got a camera that is built into the iPad, and I am able to make use of that camera. So I could easily, and you'll notice I am still within Final Cut Pro. In fact, all I did, let me go back here. Let's actually create a new clip, or a new project. So I'll choose new project. I will call this, let's call it iOS today. And we'll let the timeline settings be automatic. Essentially what that does is it looks at whatever you drop into the timeline and uses that to determine how it's set up. I'll choose record with camera. And then now I've got the option, of course, on an iPad to do video in slow-mo. This is a sort of pro camera mode that has features like auto white balance, or you can set your own white balance. You can change the exposure. You can add flash, of course, which is, you know, something I don't necessarily recommend. It does slow-mo and video on an iPhone, obviously. There are more features. You don't have Final Cut there. You can zoom in, zoom out. You can change whether you're doing 4K, HD, 720, at what frame rate you're choosing. Perhaps I'll do 24 frames per second. And down here in the settings, I can also make those adjustments a little bit better. So with the front camera, you mirror it, whether it has the shutter sound or not, adding a grid so you can kind of frame up your shot, an aspect ratio guide, which is great, and then also where the audio is coming from. So if I had had something plugged into it, then I would be able to capture the audio from there. So let me just record some video right quick. And this is, of course, a poorly exposed shot. So let me just, I think, drop that down a hair or four. And then we'll record something. And there's some of the studio. And we come down to, oh, there's the chat room in front of me. And stop. Now, after that video is done, I can tap done and bring that into Final Cut. I will take that clip. And I have some options here. I can create a multicam view if I have multiple cameras all shooting to the same thing. I could export the video right from there if I wanted. But all I want to do is take this and drag it into, there we go, sorry, and add it into the timeline. So you've got some options. You can overwrite, you can insert, you can connect, you can append. It just depends on how you have that set up. I'm going to choose insert. And now I've got this video clip. I could zoom in on that video clip. I can make changes to the audio by tapping and holding onto it, expanding those audio components. It's, of course, shot in stereo. At any time, I could go through and make a cut with the video, and then I could add transitions if I wanted to. I've got, of course, those snapping features there on the side. So all of the stuff, again, that we're used to, these effects, these transitions, are all built in. So I'll do a nice cross dissolve to add into that, and we'll do that, add to both, cross dissolve and add, let me go back there, add to both, there we go. Now I can hit play and you'll see that cross, oh, I guess it's not doing that because I do need to render it, I forgot. So once that has been rendered, there we go, it will start to render things automatically. But if you are working in something and you kind of want that to happen immediately, well, now it's not doing it. Oh, duh, Micah. I need to, yes, there we go. Thank you. Everyone in the studio is telling me, well, yeah, it's not going to cross dissolve too. There we go. So now you get a nice cross dissolve transition. Thank you, studio, for the help there. Then it will show you that. So I would imagine, too, that this probably didn't even require a full-on render. It would probably be able to preview that. It was just that my foolishness was getting in the way. So, Rosemary, tell me your thoughts before we, you know, dig perhaps even more into what's possible with Final Cut Pro on the iPad.
Well, one of the things I wanted to mention is, of course, you know, this is an Apple app and they do make take advantage of their own features, which means that there are a whole bunch of keyboard shortcuts in here that you can play with and use. And if you press and hold the command key when you've got a keyboard attached in any app, it should pop up a little dialogue, rather like this one if you're watching the video, which shows you a list of the commands and what keyboard shortcuts you need to use to activate them. So obviously you've got copy and cut and paste, which would be Command C, Command X, and Command V. But there's also things like being able to favorite your selection or go to your next edit or the beginning of the timeline, previous frames, go to a range in point, inserting things at the playhead, nudging slightly left or slightly right, and so on. And what's better, these even match up with the Mac one. So that's very convenient. And there's also some nice ones for trimming the start and the end. So for example, if you were using the ability to nudge left and nudge right using the command and the dot or period, full stop, depending on where you're from, to find, you know, that point in that video that's exactly where it starts. This is where I would like it to go from. And then you can, you know, trim back to the start from there, or, you know, you've got right to the end and this is the exact point where I want this clip to end, you can trim straight to the end from there. And I have to say, the fact that there are so many options is a little bit overwhelming to start with. If you've never edited video before or anything, then you may be thinking, oh my God, there's just so much here, which there is, but it's great. So option that Micah mentioned before, where over on the right, you've got playhead where you can, you know, navigate very precisely to where you want to go. That's something that you can hide if that's just getting in your way. Similarly, you can, in the editing mode, there's options on the timeline where you can toggle on your snapping and things like that. And whether or not control should show, whether, all your clips should be expanded, how tall your clips should be, making it easier or trickier to grab hold of them. If you should be seeing audio meters in your clips and things like that as well. And then naturally, as well as, you know, your gallery of project media, which you have, and I'm just going to, that's not the button I was looking for, swipe this down so that we've got a little bit more space here, and pull over my project media. So I've got a little library here in, Final Cut Pro to show what media that I've actually got in my project. And of course I can, change this to, show it with at the aspect ratio or show it in square. Include clip names. This can be very useful if you've actually gone through and named your clips because you've got several things that look similar. You can also sort things. You can, filter as well. So you can look for just particular media types. So if you've got a bunch of pictures and you've got some video and you've got some multicam stuff, then you can, you know, filter for those and your favorite or rejected items. And obviously you can also select things to be able to, add them to your timeline or remove them. But in the next section over from this, you've got your effects, transitions, titles, backgrounds, and these aren't all downloaded by default. Like the app is quite chunky. It's about, I think it was 500 megabytes or so when I downloaded it. But it won't download all of the transitions and the titles and the backgrounds and the effects for things directly. It will download things on an ad hoc basis when you want to use them. So if I wanted to add something using this Fusion background, then when I tap on it, it will go ahead and download it. And it's just downloading the one thing. It won't take that long. And then I'll be able to go ahead and use that dynamic background in my project to add to it. There's of course, objects and some soundtracks as well. Though if you want soundtracks, then maybe you should fire up, Logic Pro, and then you can actually go ahead and make a soundtrack instead of just, you know, recording, just including a default one. There is also a little search. So if you want something to do with fireworks, for example, then you can, like, you know, try and search and see if there's anything there, but you know, there isn't anything in that section for that. You can resize the section. So if you want to have that little side gallery open with your project media, for example, then you can have that open and have that quite small. Of course, if you've got a 12.9-inch iPad, it will be taking up even less space proportionately. And you can also adjust how much space is taken up at the bottom by that timeline scrolling across. All of these things have got, you know, so many options on them. It is just very nice. You can import from files as well, which is very nice for people who've got things that they've added to their iPad that they didn't, you know, record using Photos or similar. And so they've imported it and it hasn't gone into Photos. It's gone into files. Maybe they got an email to them by a friend or a family member or something. And so they just saved it. It's great to be able to do that. And of course, there's also markup so that you can go ahead and do a live drawing on your photo or on your video rather, so that you can, you know, if you want to, maybe a little arrow or something to, this, dragon. I'm going to see if I can do it. I've left my pencil, unfortunately, on my other iPad. And so it looks like I'm having a little bit of trouble doing that. But
Very specific, iPad feature that I think makes it, you know, worth you may be asking, you know, what's one of the reasons? I think they wanted to show the ability to do this. So let me show you really quick. And this will be poorly done as I've got the gorilla grip, as it were. But I will write out, for example, iOS today, and then I will tap done. I'm going to, because now I've done this before, I know I need to drag this out so that the full animation plays. Now watch what happens when I play this back. You will see in the background, or you will see in the foreground, iOS today gets written out as I did in that live drawing feature. So this is a kind of a fun telestration feature that's helpful. Now, one complaint that I did see from folks who are regular editors, a regular guest on this show, Christopher Lawley, I believe, was one of the people who was talking about this. Final Cut Pro for iPad does not let you currently, we hope this changes in the future, plug in an external hard drive and edit video from that external hard drive. Meaning, unlike Final Cut Pro for the Mac, where I could plug in an SSD and I could open up those files from the SSD, edit those files from the SSD, and do what I needed to do all from the SSD. With Final Cut Pro for iPad, you have to take those files and import them into the iPad, and at that point you're able to edit them. So it's a little bit different, and it basically boils down to, if you've got enough space on your iPad, it won't be too big of a deal. But if you don't have a lot of space on your iPad, you may be frustrated to learn that you can't have an external hard drive that has a bunch of space, be able to edit those video files from there and kind of move on through the process. So one thing that I have read is kind of holding some folks back from feeling that they can do truly all of their editing on an iPad, simply because it doesn't currently allow that. Now, that could change in the future. I don't know what the limitation is there, obviously, but I'm sure there's something involved with why they weren't able to make that happen, and why the video kind of needs to be imported first and foremost, to be rendered and used as you're making your clip. There are a whole lot of features that are baked into Final Cut Pro. And one thing that was helpful to me, and it will show on my screen in the top right corner, my favorite button, the three dots, the more icon. If I tap on that, it will show Final Cut Pro user guide, video tutorials, service and support, and send feedback. I'm going to start by going to Final Cut Pro user guide. And what that does is it opens up the Final Cut Pro user guide for iPad on Apple's website. Here, you will see everything that you want to see about Final Cut Pro for iPad. I can look at the table of contents. I could learn about recording video with the iPad. And within Final Cut Pro, it has all of the information I need about recording the video into a new project or into an existing project, being able to record Apple ProRes. If your iPad has that M2 chip, then you can record Apple ProRes. But what I think is super cool is if I tap those three dots again and I choose video tutorials, Ripple Training has a whole set of reviews, tutorial videos on Final Cut Pro for iPad. You've got getting started, creating project and importing media, recording with the FCP for iPad camera. I mean, everything, using soundtracks is in there, and you can get this as a purchase through the Ripple Training website. So very cool that there are 19 lessons in the tutorial. 10 of them are free, 9 remain locked. And if you want to purchase those additional lessons, it's $19. So they are continuing to add more lessons in the future, and those will automatically be included in that $19 purchase. So basically, you pay $19, you get access to every single one of the tutorials, and then any they add in the future will also be included with that. So if you're kind of wanting to go all in, deep dive into how Final Cut Pro for iPad works, the Ripple Training tutorials might be the spot for you to check out everything. But I think what I find the most magnificent about FCP for iPad is how familiar it feels. So that if you have training in Final Cut Pro for Mac, you're not going to be doing too much kind of hunting around trying to figure out how everything works, because it's so similar. And I think that's a triumph of the developers who worked on this project in particular, that I, as an FCP for Mac user, can just hop in and pretty much get started, knowing what the different buttons mean, where I need to go to do certain things. And again, as Rosemary pointed out earlier, never forget to hold down the command key on your iPad external keyboard, because you get so much information in so many apps about special keyboard shortcuts that can make things work even faster for you. Anything else you want to say about Final Cut Pro before we move on to Logic Pro?
I did just want to mention that folks who are going, ooh, $4.99 a month, $49.99 a year, I'm not in love with subscription apps, that if you were buying Final Cut Pro or Logic Pro for the Mac, it would cost you a significant chunk more up front as a one-time purchase. So it is worth considering that this is certainly a more affordable way to dip your toe in and see if these apps are the right way to go for you. So, bear that in mind. And, don't forget, of course, you can always buy app store vouchers on sale at times of the year, getting 10% off or sometimes even 20% off them, which can definitely add up when you use it on a subscription like this.
Yeah, I remember saving up to spend the $300-$400. I know it's $300 now, $299.99, to buy Final Cut Pro, and making that purchase and going, but you know, now that I have had it for years, I'm glad that I made the purchase when I did. But that's the thing too, right? Is even though many of us make a one-time purchase, there are still development teams who are continuing to work on this product and adding more features all the time and trying to make it better. So the idea that you pay once for a thing that continues to be improved forever and ever and ever, it's not sustainable. So the subscription model, as much as many of us dislike it, makes sense in sort of the trade-off that, you know, you experience there. All right, let us take a quick break before we come back to talk about Logic Pro on the iPad. It's musical, you get it? This episode of iOS Today is brought to you by Grammarly Go. As you know, today we are working and communicating more quickly than we ever have before. And, you know, sometimes you might be sitting there, you're writing something, and you just feel stuck. How exactly do I say this thing I'm trying to say? Whether you're struggling to write that thank you note, you're creating a business plan, you're giving yourself the time that you need to try and figure it out, why not shorten that time and give yourself a helping hand with Grammarly Go, Grammarly's new communication assistant powered by generative AI. You can compose intelligently. You type a prompt into Grammarly Go to generate high-quality writing so you can spend less time on that wordsmithing. You can personalize your voice, so this gives you the ability to kind of customize your preferred style of communication. You click Set Voice or the Tone indicator at the top of the Grammarly Go window to personalize your tone and determine how you want to sound. So, you know, if you want a more formal tone, you choose casual, neutral, or more formal. You, from there, you can kind of decide the formality. Oh, I want to be super casual, or oh man, I'm trying to go super formal. And then for tone, on top of just formality, you can choose personable, confident, empathetic, engaging, witty, direct. So you could go direct and formal and have a very sort of lawyer-sounding message. Grammarly Go understands the unique context, the preferred voice, the goals that you have to generate high-quality writing quickly. And with just a few clicks, you can ideate, compose, rewrite, and reply thoughtfully. Rewrite for tone, for clarity, for length. Grammarly Go helps you fine-tune your writing to reflect your personal style and be effective in any situation. You can select the text that you want to rewrite and activate Grammarly Go. Rewrite your paragraph to sound more exciting, or maybe make it sound more professional, or make it sound more inspirational. I have this habit, because I have this sort of fear of being misunderstood, that the words that I'm putting out are going to be taken, and then what I'm trying to say might be misinterpreted, might be misunderstood. And so because of that, I have a habit of writing three paragraphs where one paragraph would do, for just making sure every single possible thought of how someone might take this and make it seem like it was about this or this. I try to account for all of those things. And so those paragraphs quickly add up. This is where you could have the help that you need to say, okay, I know I'm being a little wordy here. Help me be more direct. Help me be more specific. Help me approach this with a casual tone as opposed to what I come across sounding like, which is, I don't know, a lawyer working for a Fortune 500 company who wants to make sure that they don't get sued for writing the wrong sentence. That's where I'm trying to avoid. I want to sound more like a human, even though my brain sometimes doesn't want me to be. Grammarly Go can help you out with that. You'll be amazed at what you can do with Grammarly Go. Just go to grammarly.com/go. to download and learn more about Grammarly Go. That's grammarly.com/go. Check out Grammarly Go at grammarly.com/go. Thank you for sponsoring this week's episode of iOS Today. All right, back from the break, and now it's time to talk about Logic Pro for iPad. I want to start off by saying that this has been, for me, the more interesting of the two apps, because everything with Final Cut Pro, for the most part, I saw very positive reviews. I saw a lot of upbeat conversation, people who edit in Final Cut Pro regularly, YouTubers that I follow or I'm friends with, and colleagues who do video editing, all felt pretty good about Final Cut Pro. But in our little corner of the internet, this podcasty corner of the internet, I was surprised and interested in the number of people who were unhappy with Logic Pro for iPad, because for them, from the reviews that I read, Apple was signaling that this was a tool for music creators, not other audio creators. And when you launch the app, and when you look at the advertising for it, the ultimate music studio at your fingertips, you do get that impression, right? This is a music creation tool first and foremost, rather than an audio creation tool, a more broad audio creation tool. So they talk about the beat mixer, the instruments you can have in Logic. And honestly, you know, to be fair, that's always been Logic's first success is as this music creation tool. But I do know some folks who were, you know, disappointed that they had to continue using the third-party tools they had, like Ferrite, for example, to edit their podcasts. So I'm curious, Rosemary, before I kind of show some of the, because I want to talk about the sort of built-in tutorials. I would love to hear your thoughts on Logic and whether you also feel like it is a music creation tool more so than an audio editor.
Yeah, and I think this is one of those things where any application can be what you make of it, right? If you have a hammer, everything starts looking like a nail. so there is certainly an extent of people who have been using Logic to edit podcasts for a very long time will probably figure out, like, yep, okay, I can still use this for this. It's not necessarily designed for that, but I find it's still, you know, it can be used for that, absolutely. But where people have started building alternative workflows using things like Ferrite and so on and taking advantage of those other tools, then I don't necessarily think that Logic Pro, if they're not using it for music creation and editing, is going to necessarily win them back, just because Ferrite, for example, is purpose-built for podcast editing and specifically, you know, vocal audio editing and spoken audio. So it makes sense that, you know, people would, find that they're going back to that. And, you know, this is a brand new app, so people have not really had a huge amount of time to play with it. We've only had it for a week. But it is definitely possible to apparently crash a Logic Pro. It's also possible to go in and look at the waveforms for example, the different tracks that you have and so on. So I can just hopefully pop it up here. And you can see, you know, all this stuff and so on, just like you can in other apps. So there's definitely a possibility of doing podcast editing here. I'm not sure I would go to Logic for podcast editing. It has never been my podcast editor previously. I've always stuck with things like Ferrite and other apps, and also outsourcing things to fabulous people who are much better at this sort of thing than I am. it's definitely possible to do.
Yeah, I personally am an Adobe Audition podcast editor and have been for years, so I've stuck with that. There are folks who do a heck of a job, a really good job editing with Logic on Mac. They edit podcasts and they use features like Trim Silence to help them with that. So I know it's possible there, but I can also understand and respect that, yeah, for them, they feel like this tool is not what they wanted it to be, especially for folks who were hopeful that they could have that first party app on their iPad that they're used to on the Mac. But let's start by looking at this screen here. When you first launch Logic after you've agreed to the trial, you get some different settings here, or some options here. At the top are new empty project. Then you've got learn and explore, featured sound packs, and live loop grids. In learn and explore, I love this stuff because this gives you the chance to try out and understand Logic. So I'm going to choose Start Lesson on the Logic Pro Tour. And here you're going to see this little text box pop up and it says, welcome to Logic Pro. You can show or hide parts of the app to optimize your workflow depending on what you're doing. This tour is going to introduce key working areas and shows you how to access them. First is the browser. In the browser, you browse, you search for patches, tools, loops, presets, and other content. So we'll tap that browser button in the bottom left corner, which kind of looks like an inbox, to be able to access these features. Then in the tracks area, you build an arrangement by recording and adding loops, audio files, and other material on tracks in a timeline. Recordings and added files appear as regions with different default colors. So this is the area. You've got regions on there and they've got different colors. The transport controls let you choose play, let you control playback. You can go to the start of the project. You can record. You can set up looping. And then track headers let you see, and I'll tap and drag out so we can see the different options here. You've got the ability to mute solo a track. You can swipe right on a track icon or the track list to show the track controls. So that will, I've just soloed that clip, for example. Let me swipe this back so that it's small again. Oh, they want me to keep that zoomed out. So there we go. And editors, you can edit regions of the clip. So let me just tap on these function buttons. It says tap a green MIDI region to open the piano roll editor. MIDI notes appear as colored bars that you can move, resize, and edit in other ways. Use the function buttons to trim regions, edit, or brush in MIDI notes and adjust note velocity. So there's the pencil, for example, the brush icon, velocity. So I'll tap on the pencil. And then it says tap a blue audio region to open the audio editor. And now I can see that here I have the option to open the audio editor to loop, for example. You can also trim, split, or stretch the audio region. If I tap on a drum clip, then I also get the same thing here where I've got features and settings for drumming. So I could change the type of drum, the intensity, the complexity. Then the step sequencer, which of course has different steps that are built in, and you can activate or deactivate those steps by tapping on them. And then to close the working area, I will choose the control bar here. And let me swipe. There we go. View the control bar. And then plugins as well. So it's let me click on the or tap on this. And now you can see some of the plugins that are available in each of these. So there's a direction mixer, tape delay, chroma verb, channel EQ, compressor. I mean, all of the features that you're probably used to. And then the details view, which lets you see all the different parameters. Tap a different track in the tracks list to view all of its plugins. So we'll do that. Da, 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 da. And then the mixer button, let me close the other view, of course, has each of the channel strips where you can make changes to those. Mute and solo tracks, set some for recording, and then also view the different plugins that you have set up. For anyone who's used an audio editor like this, you're going to be used to seeing these features set up this way. It's kind of a sort of standard look and feel. And then let's see, double tap an empty part of the view control bar to close open working areas and continue the lesson. So there we go. And then select a software instrument track, then tap the play surfaces button to view play surfaces. So we could change that from keyboard to drum pads, for example. Let me actually turn up the volume a little bit. And I'll choose, let's go with chord strips. And then we'll go back to the keyboard. All right. And then it says you can use to play software instruments directly, of course, on the iPad screen. Tap the play surfaces button to close the play surface and continue the lesson. And then here we go. We're almost to the end here. Live loops, which will actually let you kind of set up cells that have these little special loops in them that will replay. And then you can set them up almost organically as you're kind of going along. So it says play, arrange, and record cells freely in the live loops grid. Tap cells to start them playing and control scenes using triggers. You can also edit cells in different ways. So you'll notice that I'm kind of adding in sounds as I go to give more as I'm going through. And then it says, now you're ready to explore creating music with Logic Pro. View another lesson using the links below. So I'm going to choose end lesson here. I'm going to stop the play of mine. So what I could do in this view here, in this sort of live loops view, is I could hit the record button and start creating music using these different live loops. I've got a dreamy piano. I've got atmosphere. I've got trapdoor, something called Absolute Zero. And the Tompkins, let's see, the Tompkins Square 808 bass. And then I could go through and start making music with these live loops, add more if I'd like to, and kind of work that way. But that is just sort of the one example of using Logic Pro for the sake of creating sort of your standard audio. But again, there's so much that you can do within these editors. And if you were working with a more standard setup, if you were trying to just edit an audio clip, for example, let me go back. And what I'll do is I will tap to create a new project. And let's just do some simple tracks. And we will do audio from the iPad microphone. So here, I will go ahead and move out of these audio patches and just set this clip to record. Let's mute this temporarily. Okay, so what I'm going to do is record some audio, and then I'm going to show you kind of what you can do to it. So I will go ahead and hit the record button. And now I'm recording some audio on my iPad Pro in Logic Pro for iPad. The audio is being recorded through the microphone that is built into the iPad. If I wanted to, I could set up an external microphone that plugs into the iPad using its USB-C connector and record audio that way. I'll hit stop, and now we can bring back the audio for this. Now, if I play that back. Now I'm recording some audio on my... You can hear this, but what I want to do is... show patches for this. So let me add Angelic to this clip and see what happens. Now I'm recording some audio on my iPad Pro. Honestly, doesn't sound very angelic to me.
It sounds more like somebody is trying to take over the world and they've got like the reverb on max. Like,
yes.
You know, now you will do everything I tell you.
Let's try Bright Vocal instead and let's hear how that sounds.
Now I'm recording some audio on my iPad Pro in Logic Pro for iPad. The audio
still has a lot of reverb in the background, so I can go in and I can't find that. So I can go in, there we go, and make some adjustments by, for example, removing the stereo delay, the tape delay, to get rid of those and just keep it with the channel EQ, the compressor, and the de-esser. Those I want. I didn't want the rest of it. So now if we play it back.
Now I'm recording some audio on my iPad Pro.
And what I love Logic Pro is that right
iPad.
Here, you can see that this is live view of that channel EQ. So watch as I play this back.
Now I'm recording
I'm
some
actually
audio
seeing
on my iPad
how it's
Pro
making adjustments to the
Logic
audio
Pro
waveform as it's playing back,
the
which is pretty
is
impressive
being
that this is all happening
is
on an
iPad,
iPad.
If I wanted to, I could.
As opposed to, you know, needing more processing power that you get from a Mac. So obviously, that's the thing about Logic, I think, even more than Final Cut Pro, is that it is so incredibly like feature packed. There's so many different settings, so many different options that it's worth taking a look at some of the tutorials, some of the especially taking a look at the owner manual or the sort of user guide. That's what I was looking for, the name user guide, which will then let you kind of delve deep into this application and everything that it can do. Rosemary, why don't you tell us a little bit about your thoughts on Logic Pro for iPad?
Yeah, so I'm, you know, pretty excited by this. I've done, you know, a fair bit of playing with music. I'm not going to call it like editing or creating because it's not really that, but I've done a fair bit of playing with music over the years, you know, creating things with various different MIDI controllers and so on. And I've been enjoying playing with Logic Pro. And something that if people are looking to, you know, have a play with this, that I will note is that Logic Pro is available on many more iPads than Final Cut Pro. Final Cut Pro needs iPads with an M1 chip or later. Logic Pro is an A12 Bionic chip iPad models or later. It's got a much longer compatibility list. So if you're looking to have a play with one of these apps and see what it's like, then Logic Pro, I think, is going to be a little easier to get into simply due to the fact that it's got you know, more compatibility and also the fact that you can go through those tutorials that Micah mentioned at the start to learn how this works. So if you want to learn how to do create a beat with a step sequencer, you can do that. There's also Beat Breaker and so on. And there is a whole host, a really long list actually, of tutorials here, which, you know, is really nice, I have to say. You know, if you're looking like, okay, like live loops, I want to learn all about live loops, there's three tutorials there right now. There's also working with plugins and things like that, as well as, you know, recording instruments and finding and adding loops and the browser tour and all of that. And it is just, you know, fun to have a play. You can also change your new project settings, which I've cleverly put my face in front of, so I'll just move my face a moment if you're watching the video. And you can change things like your default tempo and time signature, your key to be a major or minor, and what note it starts from. And you do have all the notes you might expect. I should note, I did test, just in case, German speakers will be pleased to know that it goes from A through to H, and it doesn't have the B, I believe it is. I checked it. And you can also change your default sample rate. So if you want to be able to output everything in 96 kilohertz instead of the standard 48, you can change that. And then, you know, when you go ahead and create your new empty project, it just, you know, brings you straight in so that you can go, okay, I'm going to connect a MIDI device, which you can connect via USB-C. And that's it. You can go straight from there. You can record audio with your iPad microphone. And when you tap on those magic three dots that Micah loves so much, you can change the options for each of those. So if you're using your iPad microphone, for example, it will be stuck in mono, but you can turn on and off input monitoring, etc. MIDI options, you can choose to use external MIDI. You know, when you've got things attached, you get more options. It feels very nice and intuitive to use. And I've certainly been enjoying playing with it so far.
Beautiful. I did want to point out, I looked for the guide, 959 pages is the Logic Pro user guide for iPad. So there's a lot in there. But if you really want to know how to make use of Logic Pro for iPad, it's well worth checking out the guide. The last page, sort of in the guide, Synth Basics, starts at 915. So
there's also a web-based version of this guide as well, which you can look at on the Apple website for anybody who is going, wait, I have to download a nearly 1,000-page PDF. They have Logic Pro and Final Cut Pro user guides for the iPad specifically online, which can be downloaded as a PDF directly from there.
All right. So, folks, honestly, these feature-packed apps are going to be comparable to what you can use on your Mac already, with a few features like we talked about, editing directly from an SSD in Final Cut Pro, or in the case of Logic Pro, some of the podcast editing features that folks had hoped would be there not being there. But outside of that, I think anyone who's used these tools before will find this familiar. And then, as Rosemary has pointed out, given the $4.99 a month, $49.99 a year price, arguably a lot more accessible to a lot more folks. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see, you know, some new entries into the field because of these tools being made available in a way that's a little bit more accessible. And I think that's what's most exciting about this. I think that's what makes this well worth A, talking about, but B, celebrating. So yeah, I would love, love, love if you sent us your creations that you make with Logic Pro, with Final Cut Pro, and also consider that now these tools are included in the long list of applications and features and operating system bits that you can always ask Rosemary and me about by sending us emails, iostoday@twit.tv. We will go through those 949-page guides, if we don't have that information already, and answer those questions for you. So that's what we're here to do. We'd love to help. iostoday@twit.tv. And yes, as I mentioned, share your creations. We'd love to see that. We'd love to see what people are making. Up next, we've got the news. It's time for the news up next. All right. Up first in the news is just a brief mention that I talked about. There are several guides and reviews out there for Final Cut Pro and Logic Pro for iPad. Rosemary, you linked to one of those reviews in 9 to 5 Mac.
Yes, I did. And it's just going through talking about how Final Cut Pro for iPad is a step in the right direction, but it's highlighting a couple of those limits of iPadOS. Now, I'm personally thinking that anybody who's there going, yes, iPadOS is limited, you know, it's not macOS, absolutely right. The timing, however, of the Final Cut Pro and Logic release last week, a month before WWDC, not even a month before WWDC, 3 weeks before WWDC, implies to me that there's going to be some exciting stuff coming down the pipeline at WWDC. So I think maybe we're going to see some of those restrictions and handicaps, perhaps being a way to look at it, disappear or at the very least evolve into something less problematic for folks. So it's certainly interesting. Some people were saying that they weren't super happy with the keyboard shortcuts for iPadOS because you can't customize them in Final Cut Pro or Logic Pro, but you can on the Mac. Well, you can customize keyboard shortcuts in every application on the Mac, and you can't customize them at all on the iPad with the exception of using accessibility controls. Things like that, they really are iPad limitations, not Final Cut limitations. But let's see what happens. Maybe we will see some more customizations here. And just like when we first got trackpad support, that came as an accessibility feature and then rolled out, I believe it was a 0.3 or a 0.2 release. I don't know if you remember, of iPadOS, for everybody, and just became, you know, a thing. So who knows what we're going to see? It's very exciting. And I can't wait.
So in 2022, the app of the year for Apple Watch was Gentler Streak. And Gentler Streak was also a finalist for the 2023 Apple Design Award. This is an app that I believe we've talked about on the show before. It is kind of looking at ways to set goals and keep track of things without being too much of a guilt system, like a lot of the other apps that are out there. That's why it's called Gentler Streak. And there's now a new feature for Gentler Streak.
Yeah, there is. So Gentler Streaks has added menstrual tracking to its well-being section. They've got a little guide in the App Store with their major update, which is really nice that they've got that there. I won't go into the app and go through everything because I uninstalled it by accident earlier today and meant to reinstall it before the show but ran out of time. But they've gone through and added that. And it's just really nice to see that this app, which, you know, has become very popular for very good reason, continue to add new features like this. So if you're somebody who needs to track your menstrual cycle, then it is now under the well-being section in Gentler Streak. And if you haven't tried checking out Gentler Streak for fitness tracking and so on with your Apple Health data, then it's well worth looking into as an option. Just it's a nice app that's got, you know, a lot of gentle as the name implies, encouragement for you. And it's certainly not so mean about breaking a streak, because that does happen to all of us with the best of intentions. I slightly overdid my workouts on Sunday, Micah. It turns out like 3 hours of acrobatics in various forms can really do a number on you. And this morning I was just barely able to move. Yesterday I was okay, but today, oh God, that really hit this morning. So I'm glad it's eased up a bit. But yeah, whatever your reason for needing to take it easy, gentler streaks might be a nice one to check out to help you with that.
And then if you've ever, as someone who doesn't own a, if you are someone who doesn't own a HomePod or HomePod Mini, if you've ever looked at us, those who do own them, and felt saddened by the fact that we were able to send messages as an intercom feature on our HomePod and HomePod Minis, that I could annoy my partner by sending a message to a HomePod Mini placed precariously next to his face, then you, as a Sonos user out there, should rest easy knowing that you will now be able to make use of this feature from the Soro app, which I wouldn't be surprised if, Rosemary, you're familiar with the Soro app for the mm-hmm. fact that it adds shortcuts. Tell us about the Soro app and this latest feature.
Yeah, so the Soro app is essentially, hey, I have Sonos devices. I want better shortcut support for them. How can I get that? Well, you can download the Soro app and ta-da, you get shortcut support. Yay. It adds a whole number of features. There is also, for anybody who's got Roku devices, Remu by the same developer, and that adds shortcut support for that. And so the app essentially itself just shows you how you can use different shortcuts. It's got a whole bunch of examples, including things like walkie-talkie, Sonosbot, text-to-speech, and so on. And now they've added support for an intercom-like feature, which is very nice. It's with the speak text action, where I've now lost the example that was showing up here earlier. I think I installed the update from the App Store instead of the beta. But either way, you can go through and control everything basically with it, which is really nice. Wow. And it will even it'll show you all of the Sonos devices you've got on your network. It is $7.99 to download, but it gives you, I think it's 24 different or 34 shortcuts actions for your Sonos devices. So if you want to be able to control your Sonos, which they've got AirPlay support, they do have some control through HomeKit, but Soro app is just so much more precise. It's well worth checking out.
Yes. That is actually pretty incredible if you do have Sonos devices.
And I should mention as well, if you don't have Sonos devices, you've got IKEA Symfonisk devices, which are Sonos speakers in an IKEA casing. This works for them too.
Oh, good.
So so if you've not got, the Sonos Beam or something like that, and you've got, the IKEA Symfonisk or the IKEA Symfonisk lamp, then you can actually take advantage of this regardless.
All right. Is that the music? It's time for Shortcuts Corner. Welcome to Shortcuts Corner, the part of the show that's totally not planned and catches me by surprise every week. Now, this is the part of the show where you write in with your shortcuts requests, and Rosemary Orchard, our shortcuts expert, provides a response. And oftentimes, that response is an actual solution to your problem. The person writing in this week is Steve, and Steve writes, "My partner and I care for an elder with moderate dementia and declining mobility. We have been using a baby cam to keep an eye on her during the day to make sure we run downstairs to help her move around. We're looking for a bedtime solution where we can get some sleep but still be notified if she tries to leave the bed or her room. I have vibration, motion, and door sensors in and around her room, but I'm having trouble figuring out how to minimize the interruptions to just what we need to know, and most important, when we need to know. I am trying to find a way to turn on certain notifications from specific sensors during bedtime when we turn on our sleep focus mode, or using some sort of virtual switch to turn on or off notifications for a group of sensors in the time we want. Ideally, we would like to turn on these notifications for ourselves on our own iPhones with a toggle, but we would be fine with both of our phones being set to the same state for these notifications. I know how to create virtual switches, but figuring out the rest with focus modes, shortcuts, and switches is confusing. Any suggestions? Thanks, Steve. Woof. This sounds like a tough one.
It is. So I'm going to go through a couple of levels of this for want of a better way to put it, because I feel like for most people, what they probably want to do is built into HomeKit itself. You don't need anything fancy or anything in particular. You just go into HomeKit and you pick one of your devices, or rather specifically one of your sensors or security related devices. So for example, by security related, I mean things like a lock on a door or a camera. And so I can go tap on my bathroom occupancy sensor right here. And then if I scroll down a little bit, then there's a section for status and notifications. And so here I could turn off showing it in my home summaries if I wanted to. That's the big overview in the home app. But I can also turn on activity notifications. And if I turn on activity notifications, then I can specify at a particular time, for example, at night. Once I've tapped on at night, I get an info icon. And when I tap on that, then I can actually choose what at night means. And unfortunately for us, that's related to sunset and sunrise. So that may not be what Steve specifically wants here, but you can also say at specific times. So say Steve and his wife usually go to bed at about the same time every night, at say 10 p.m., then you could actually have this for 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. and then restrict it to specific times. And you can also have it for people. If you've got more than one person in your home, I only have one person in this HomeKit home, then you can choose when I'm at home, when anyone is at home, no one is at home, etc. I've got when I'm at home or when I'm not at home, and then you can turn this up, set this up for each person, so that they get notifications when that sensor is tripped. So the fact that there are, however, multiple sensors involved makes me think that Steve has gone down a bit of a rabbit hole with various things, and is trying a bunch of stuff out. My big, bringing out the heavy solutions for this suggestion would be a Home Assistant, because you can then say, okay, if my phone is in sleep mode, then I'll use the shortcuts actions from my phone to tell Home Assistant I'm in sleep mode, and then it will turn on sending notifications about this, that, and the other, and can send them as critical alerts and so on as well. But there is another option, which I'm going to mention. And if you tap on the plus in the Home app, then you can add an automation. And then you can scroll down once you've selected your event. So I'm going to say a sensor detects something in this particular case. And if I can find my bathroom, then I will use that same sensor just for test purposes. There we go. And then you can choose, sensor turns on, sensor turns off, switch turns on, switch turns off. Those are options as well. You've got those same limitations of time and people if you want. And then you can actually scroll all the way down to the bottom in the next section and convert to a shortcut. And then here, what you can do is you can actually go a little bit more in depth. For example, you can use the status of a HomeKit device. So for example, if you've turned on a I am asleep virtual switch, then you can get the state of that. And so I'll just use my light panels as a proxy. Actually, I will not. I will use something slightly less complicated, something that has an on-off button, ideally. Do I have something with just a simple on-off button here? There should be something that's a switch. Bathroom light. My bathroom light just turns on and off, so it's got the power state. So if I were to run this, it will just say, at the moment it says no. If my bathroom light were on, it would say yes. And then you can say if and I'll just select that one. If that power state, so that's if it's on, then you can go into something a little more fun with, say, get contents of URL. And if you were to use a get contents of URL action, you could use this in combination with an app like Pushcut. Now, full disclosure, I'm part of the team behind the development of Pushcut, which is an app for extending shortcuts and doing things like fancy custom notifications. And then you can send a custom notification. I'll actually just pick my door still open one here, and I'll just copy that URL. And then you can actually, instead of getting the contents of the peristate, you could paste in that URL here. I won't paste it because it's got my secret in there and I don't want to reveal my secret to everyone, even though obviously I can reset it. But you can then send that notification, and it would only send that notification if that other thing were on. So you can do this with converting things to shortcuts and using something like Pushcut, or there are other apps as well that support something similar to this, like Pushover and Pushbullet and things like that. You can even then have it update things and remove those. You can try doing this with just HomeKit, or you can go for the big guns and get out Home Assistant, and you can create some virtual switches and so on in HomeKit, or you can just do the work in Home Assistant and share back the results to HomeKit as you need, whatever works for you. The trick is figuring out which one you want to start with. I'd suggest try starting with just HomeKit and just setting up those simple notifications when something happens, so that you just, when that sensor detects something, you get a notification, and see how that goes. Because I think, Steve, that will probably do most of the work for you.
All right. And then coming out of that into feedback and questions, Peter has written in, "Hi, Rosemary and Micah. I received an email from Apple this morning advising that they were shutting down my photo stream on the 26th of July. The email said they were letting me know as at least one of my devices was using it and they would be deleting any photos attached to it. I have used Apple products for about 8 years and have never heard of my photo stream. I back up to iCloud, but this seems to be something different. I've looked across my devices and can't see any sign of it where they said it would be. I'm afraid the links provided by Apple do not clearly articulate the changes from my point of view. If you think this is worth mentioning, could you discuss on your show what this is and what needs to be done before it goes away? Kind regards, Peter." So Leo and I actually talked about this over the weekend on Ask the Tech Guys. He mentioned that he mentioned it, and I kind of said, "Oh, I'm not really that concerned about it," because for most folks, they're not using it. Because it was the way that things kind of once were, and then Apple introduced iCloud Photo Library, and that was the kind of enabled by default set of features. So when that happened, my photo stream became less and less important. My photo stream had several limitations. For one, it would only stream the photos for a period of time, after which they would disappear from your photo stream. For two, they were lower resolution versions of the photos. And for three, it was replaced, of course, with the more powerful iCloud photo library. So I actually did not receive a notification about this because I don't have this turned on any of my devices. But if you do, then of course this is a problem. Now, one place that I could see a lot of people having this turned on that they might not know is an Apple TV. Apple TV was kind of one of the best places for this because you could see a stream of photos right there as they were coming through and be able to display them, kind of wallpaper style almost, or screensaver style almost. But outside of that, I think a lot of people are going to have them off. Unfortunately, there are still some folks who do have it turned on who may be worried that when the feature gets turned off, it's going to cause a problem for them. So yeah, Rosemary, what is some advice we can give to our listeners regarding the iCloud photo stream?
Well, first of all, I would recommend go to appleid.apple.com or go to the settings app on one of your devices, go to your Apple ID, and then look at all the devices signed into that Apple ID account. Make sure it's the same one as the email that you got sent, because you may have a second iCloud account that you've forgotten about that has an old device registered to it that you don't have anymore, whatever, something along those lines. But check what devices you've got, and any devices that you do not own, that you sold off to other people or recycled or whatever, make sure you remove those from your Apple ID. And then that will probably, for I would suggest the vast majority of you folks listening and watching, resolve your problem. That'll be it. Bye-bye. And then you just don't need to worry. Now, if you do have some old devices floating around in there that you can't update, for example, because of course the other thing to do is make sure that you install all of your updates, then you can go into them, for example, on the Apple TV in the settings. You can look at turning off photo stream and things like that, and just see if anything goes horribly, horribly wrong. And Apple does have the option of being able to download things from the photo stream if they are there. I believe you can do that at iCloud.com. You should already have a copy of these images on your device, because it is just a lower resolution copy that was there to be kind of like shared as like a preview across your devices so that you would have kind of an idea of, you know, what things you've been up to recently, which if you were me meant that you got a screensaver on Apple TV of lots of screenshots of like shortcuts and workflow back in the day. So I didn't really use that feature. If you need backups of your images and so on, and you were using PhotoStream as a backup system, first of all, I seriously hope you didn't lose any photos because it wasn't actually a backup. And secondly, I'd recommend getting some iCloud storage for that so that you can sync the images between devices properly at full resolution without losing anything. If that's not an option, don't forget, if you've got something like an Office 365 account, then you get OneDrive storage space. If you install the OneDrive app on your device, you can back up photos automatically. Similarly, if you have a subscription to Google Photos for your family, you can install the Google Photos app and back everything up, and you can back things up with Dropbox. There are lots of solutions for backing up photos on your iPhone and iPad, but if you use your camera and you want to keep those pictures, definitely check out one of them so that you don't have anything going missing. So there we go. That's basically what we need to know about.
Awesome. Yeah, it's. I think that this ends up being something that scares people, right? That it's not as frightening as it sounds, given the fact that this was already kind of a photo stream that drops things off after a while anyway. It's not as if you're truly losing anything. And one of the things I've failed to mention is that if you had them going to the photo stream after iCloud Photo Library was added, you had to say, I want to save these to my iCloud Photo Library. So it was a mess, and I'm glad that it's going away. It ended up confusing a lot of folks. And so there's some tips for you, but also I think a little bit of comfort knowing that, hey, this is not super, super important. All right. Let us move right along to take a quick break before we come back with our app caps, because I do want to tell those of you out there who are perhaps thinking about, the ad reads that we do on the show, the sponsors we have on the show, and maybe you're considering that you would like to join the team, that you would like to help support the network and also get your product, your service, your software out in front of all of the listeners and viewers that we have here at Twit. Because here at Twit, we're dedicated to building a highly engaged community of tech enthusiasts by offering them the knowledge they need to understand and use technology in today's world. That's what Rosemary and I do on iOS Today every single week. In order to do that, we create partnerships with trusted brands and make incomparable introductions between our audience and our partners. With Twit, you can keep your brand in front of your target audience and continue to grow. Because at Twit, we deliver powerful host-read ads by tech experts. You've heard them on this show. You've heard them on all of our shows. And according to Nielsen, 56% of podcast listeners pay more attention when a host reads an ad on their show. We pride ourselves on delivering information relevant to our audience. 72% of our listeners have a job function that's directly related to technology, and 87% of our audience are involved with tech and IT decisions. We have top earners listening to our shows. Overall, 66% of our audience earns more than $100,000 annually, and 23% earns more than $200,000. Partnering with Twit means you're going to get the gold standard in advertising because we go above and beyond. We've got valuable services like a full-service continuity team that's supporting everything from copywriting to graphic design. So if you're going, oh, I don't know about how we're going to write this copy, Our team can handle that part. Oh, I don't know what the graphics. Our team can handle that part. We do embedded ads that are unique every time and guarantee over delivery on impressions. So you're getting more than what you pay for. Onboarding services, detailed reporting that are offered free of cost to our direct clients, courtesy commercials that are shareable across social media and landing pages. So, you know, you hear, well, let's just say me, read an ad for you and you think, oh, that's great. I want to introduce my product to new audiences using this. That's what we make. We make these courtesy commercials for you to share on social media and landing pages. And of course, other free gifts like mentions in our newsletter that's sent to thousands of fans, recession bonuses, social media promotions, and value add on shows you didn't even have to purchase. So occasionally, your ads might show up on a show that you didn't even have to pay for it to be there. That is what we provide. That's the gold standard. Our listeners often become our partners. The founder of Thanks to Canary, Harun Mir, says, we expected Twit to work well for us because we were longtime listeners who, over the years, bought many of the products and services we learned about on various shows, and we were not disappointed. The combination of the very personal ad reads and the careful selection of products that Twit largely believe in gives the ads an authentic, trusted voice that works really well for products like ours. 10 out of 10. Will use again. Ah, doesn't that sound great? Our listeners are a highly intelligent, highly engaged, tech-savvy audience. So are you ready to elevate your brand? If you are, join us. Launch your campaign today. Break out of the advertising norm and grow your brand by giving an authentic introduction of your products and services to a qualified audience by experts you trust. Check out what we have to offer at twit.tv/advertise. That's twit.tv/advertise. Please consider joining Twit with your product, your service, your company. We'd love to have you. All right, let us move right along to the AppCap segment of the show. This, of course, is the part of the show where we place caps atop our heads to honor our app or gadget picks of the week. These are the apps and gadgets we are using now or have used for quite some time that we want to share with all of you because we think they're great and we want you to know about them. And then, of course, to cap off the show, we put things on our heads, like this delightful cap I'm wearing atop my head. Perhaps it will be familiar to you as I am doing this voice and also wearing this cap. Anyway, Rosemary Orchard, tell us about the cap atop your head and then tell us about your app or gadget pick of the week.
Well, the cap atop my head, it's silver. It's glittery, which means that my house is now covered in glitter. And if I want to get rid of it, I have to burn my house down and move. And it's a cowboy hat because, of course, why wouldn't I wear a silver glittery cowboy hat for iOS today? There's no particular reason for it other than the fact it came in my box of party hats. And, you know, I'm talking about some fun things today, including games on the Nintendo Switch. So I have previously had as my app cap Switch Buddy, which is a handy dandy little app to help you connect your Nintendo Switch to your iPhone and you know, do various things with it. But this app called Game Widgets by the same developer is to help you keep track of upcoming game releases, not just on Nintendo Switch, also available on Steam, PlayStation, Xbox, Quest, all of the games consoles. So there are a number of different widgets available. There's teeny tiny little widgets. There's large widgets. And there's a calendar, large calendar widget as well. And then there are some medium sized widgets. And so what you can do if I just open the app is you can go ahead and just sort of scroll through upcoming releases of games that might be there. And if you see something, you go, ooh, I'll tap on that and see if that's something that I'm interested in. So if I was looking at Crash Team Rumble, then I'd see that that was going to be released on the 20th of June. And I could add that to my favorites. So I can get a bunch of information about it and see it even supports multiplayer. What you can also do is see all of your favorites and then see upcoming releases. Now, there's also a search button in the top right. So if I tap on that, then I can type in apparently Elder instead of Zelda. and then I can see Legend of Zelda, Tears of the Kingdom. And this one is in my favorites. And so if I look at my favorites, then I'll see that one there. And if you download the app for free, then you only have three favorites available to you. So I'd have to unfavorite something before I can favorite something else. And when I go to favorite an item, then I can choose which platform I would be interested in getting this on. So if I wanted to get this on PlayStation 5 versus Xbox One, they may have slightly different release dates. In this particular game's case, they're the same. But then in my widgets, I can see what's coming up. So don't forget, widgets on iPhone and iPad don't update immediately. So the fact that Zelda's still there is not Game Widget's fault. That's iOS being good about my battery life. But in widgets, I have a small widget of a release countdown, which is going to count down the days until my next release. I have a medium release countdown widget, which again counts down the days. And then there is a medium up next widget, which shows the next release that is going to be incoming in my list, complete with the dates and the little artwork and so on. There is an update list widget, which shows me in a large view, a nice sort of colorful with artwork version of the next release. And then underneath that, there's a space in the listing for more as a text space. And then there's a calendar one. And I have to say, you know, what works out quite nicely here is you can also, for some of these, specify a particular one. And then when you tap on it, it will take you to that. So this widget here, when I edit it, I can it's the release countdown. I can choose which game to follow in the release countdown. So I can set this back to Zelda and it will show me that it's been released. And then if I were to edit it again instead of tapping on it, then I can change it back to, in this case, Calico, The Quilts and Cats of Calico, which is a board game that I have very much enjoyed and I'm looking forward to the digital release of on Nintendo Switch and Steam. So if you or somebody in your life likes to keep track of upcoming releases of games, then this is a cute and pretty way to do it. It's free to track three games and $3.99 a year to unlock unlimited ones and support the developer of this and a few other great apps. So why not give it a try and a play and add some widgets to your iPhone home screen?
Nice. The cap atop my head is the wonderful cap from now I'm forgetting what it's called because
Alice in Wonderland.
It's the Mad Hatter's cap from Alice in Wonderland. And I think it's a delightful hat. But the app that I'm talking about this week is going to sound familiar to some of you who tuned in just last week as we talked about Apple Arcade updates. I have been playing this game so much that I had to make it my app cap pick because it's wasted so much of the time in my life. It is a game called Cityscapes, and it is available in Apple Arcade as part of your Apple Arcade subscription. And it is a city building sim that doesn't have any of those ridiculous free-to-play mechanics. So since when you start out, you have one little city. It's called River Valley. And you start out at level one. You're trying to build up your city. You'll notice that I have now opened up not two, not three, but four cities. I'm currently still playing through my second city, though. I haven't moved on to three or four yet because I'm trying to get all of the areas unlocked in the second city. So let me tap on my second city here. And this is Glacier Glen. You'll notice that in my Apple Arcade friends, I currently rank at number one because nobody else is playing this game. But good luck to anyone who does join because I have quite a few points. So when I tap on play, it'll take us into the city. And you can see my city here that has been building up over time. You start out by building roads. Roads are required for building certain buildings next to them. But then from there, you have to add resources to your city that are needed. So you need to add water to locations. You need to add power to locations. Also, certain buildings will sort of pollute your city. So you need to add groves of trees to kind of balance that out. There are these little goals that are given to you on the left side of the screen here, like increasing the education provided. Now, I've got a few options for increasing the education provided. I can either go in and find the education buildings that I already have in the city and pay to upgrade them, or I could add new buildings. What I'm going to do is look around to see what I do have. So I'm going to tap on my building options here, and I will choose education. And then what that does is it shows me on the map the different buildings that are education buildings. So I've got an elementary school here. I'll go ahead and upgrade that. Then I'll go back in and choose education again. That's the one thing I don't like about this is that I have to keep retapping. You'll notice that this says level 5 and there's no option to upgrade. That means it's reached its max level. So unfortunately, I can't do anything with that education building, but let's look around. We've got a high school over here. I can upgrade for 11K. We also have a, where was it? I think there was an elementary school nearby. Okay, that one's already reached level 5. This elementary school has also reached level 5. So we'll keep looking around because I know I've installed some libraries and colleges as well. And I'm spending the money that I have. The better your city is, there's a university, the more money you get in taxes. So right now, every time this little meter at the top reaches max, I get 21.1K in taxes that I can then use to help improve my city. So as I've upgraded those buildings, we should start to see that number on the left rise. The problem is, depending on how you upgrade versus add, if it's in a location where there aren't a lot of residences, then you're not actually providing any new education. So I would have to find a place where I could add some education buildings that would actually increase it. These little exclamation points next to certain characters are little kind of choices you get to make. So it says, Mayor, quick, this windmill is running at full capacity. Do you want to upgrade its generator permanently? So I can either pay 2K to increase the power production of this windmill, or I say, no way, my approval rating drops, which drops the amount I earn in taxes, and then I have to try to regain that. I'm going to spend the 2K to upgrade that power generator, make it better. And then I saw another exclamation point over here. It says, Mayor, pollution is very high around this park. We could plant some trees to reduce the pollution, but it's going to cost us. So for 1K, I can drop pollution by 40, and I can also add 2 to my approval rating, which is already at 100 because I'm a great mayor. So in this case, I will not be adding anything to my approval rating, but I am reducing pollution. Now, most of this city, you'll notice I have filled at this point. I've got a few more places where I can start adding things. So let me look down here in my construction menu. And here in the top left, I've got my needs. So I need 1.1K workers and 6.3K shoppers. So that means I need to add more to my population. If I tap in the middle down here at the bottom, because this is for residences, the middle is for shops. So here you can see that I'm good to go as far as what my residents need. They don't need any more shopping at the moment. And jobs, they're doing okay with jobs. But here's the thing. As soon as I start adding residences, then the needs for more jobs and more shopping is going to increase as well. So I'm going to add a few of these very expensive high-rise buildings to the map. And you'll notice that these have to go along the city streets that I have here. I cannot place them just anywhere on the map, unlike many of the other properties. So I can place fire stations and some of the power generators and pollution reduction options like parks. Those can go in special places that do not need to be necessarily attached to a road. So let me go ahead and I'm going to add a new education building just to see how that does for us. So this is a $14,000 building that will add 800 to education. And I want to put it next to residences like these. So we'll drop that there. And then I also want to go ahead and add a few smaller options. So this is 300. Well, let's see. Let's move it to where I've got these new residences. So I'm going to move over to the side of the map. Ooh, where I've got these residences here, and I will drop that. Okay. And then now you'll see I've increased education by 243 at first, but as these new buildings get built, that number should go up as well. Now, one last thing that I'll show here, you'll see I'm going to pause it because I don't want this to run out. So here it is showing that this building is saying, look, we need 7 more police officers in the area. And this meter is filling up here on the left. So this meter is red, and as it fills up, if it reaches max, it will actually drop your building a whole level, and you'll have to build it back up again. You want your buildings to reach max level because then you can start merging them together, which actually make them more powerful. That means you can add more people to them. They take up less resources, et cetera, et cetera. It's a really cool kind of mechanic that's built in. So this has provided me hours of distraction and enjoyment. And it's, I think, very easy to kind of pick up on how it works. As you go on in the campaign, the cities have different mechanics that make them harder. So, for example, the second city that I'm in right now, there's not as much water. So there are only certain places where you can drop your water towers and pumps and things that will actually bring water to your buildings. And then also, due to the nature of the terrain, the roads cost double. So you have to, especially in the beginning, do a lot of resource management to try and make sure that you can build roads, which lets you build more buildings, which lets you add more people to your city, which lets you make more in taxes, and it kind of builds on that. So the third city is going to have its own set of unique circumstances that will make it more difficult to create a thriving city, and then you go on from there. One warning, your phone will get hot, your battery will run out, so just be mindful of that as you are playing this, because it is doing this simulation there on the phone and does take a lot of processing. But that is Cityscapes, available via Apple Arcade on your iPhone. And this is iOS Today. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of iOS Today. If you have questions, feedback, concerns, shortcuts, corner requests, etc., please send those to iostoday@twitch.tv. We'd love to hear from you. You can tune in to watch this show live if you like by going to twit.tv/live. There, starting around 9 a.m. Pacific, 1600 UTC, 12 p.m. Eastern, tune in every Tuesday to watch us as we record the show. The best way to get the show, though, is by subscribing, because when you subscribe to the show or follow the show, depending on which service you're using, you will get this show all knitted together, buttoned up and put together in its best format possible. And that is available by going to twit.tv/iOS. There you will find links to subscribe to audio or subscribe to video. You choose your application and then click subscribe. That will let you get it on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Spotify. We're also just a plain old RSS feed. So whatever RSS application you're using to get your shows and your stuff, you can get iOS Today there. I also want to mention Club Twit at twit.tv/clubtwit. Consider joining the club, starting at $7 a month, $84 a year. You out there can be a member of Club Twit. When you join, you get every single Twitch show with no ads, just the content. You also get access to the Twit Plus bonus feed that has extra content you won't find anywhere else, behind the scenes, before the show, after the show, Club Twit events, all get published there. And access to the members-only Discord server, a fun place to go to chat with your fellow Club Twit members and also those of us here at Twit. It's like an app, and the app has lots of different chat rooms that you can join and talk to us and talk to your fellow Club Twit members. Rosemary Orchard is an incredibly active member of the Club Twit Discord, all starting at $7 a month, $84 a year. You can choose to pay more if you'd like. We heard from some people who said, hey, you keep adding stuff to the club, I'd like to give you more than just $7. So we made that possible, but starts at $7. And along with all of that, I mentioned making the club more valuable. You also get access to some great shows. There's the Untitled Linux Show, which is a show all about Linux. You also get access to the Hands-on Windows program, a show made by Paul Thurrott that covers Windows tips and tricks. There's Hands-on Mac by yours truly, where I cover Apple tips and tricks, not just the Mac, although it's been a big focus on the Mac as of late. And the incredible Home Theater Geeks, brought to you by Scott Wilkinson. That is a show that covers all sorts of home theater devices, suggestions, products. It's all sorts of stuff there. So consider checking out Home Theater Geeks as well. All part of your Club Twit subscription. twit.tv/clubtwit. Rosemary Orchard, if folks want to follow you online and check out all the great work you're doing, where should they go to do so?
The best place to go is rosemaryorchard.com, which has got links to the various places that I'm found on the internet, though I have also just signed up for Blue Sky, where you can find me with username Rosemary Orchard. And you can also find apps, podcasts, and books that I'm involved in on that site as well. Other than that, as Micah mentioned, in that ClubTwit Discord, where folks have been asking some good questions. I'm waiting to hear back from somebody who had a question about focus modes and the filtering of calendars on their Apple Watch. I've got a few follow-up questions before I can answer that for them. But it's always great fun hanging out there. What about you, Micah?
You can find me at Micah Sargent on many a social media network, or you can head to chihuahua.coffee, chihuahua.coffee, where I've got links to many of the places I'm most active online, as well as my podcasts. You'll notice that my chihuahua.coffee page has recently changed. I'm using a really cool service called Bento, and it made it very easy for me to list my different social media sites, my podcasts. This is not a sponsor. I just really like Bento for what it's been able to provide. So I decided to take that chihuahua.coffee URL and forward it to this. Check that out, chihuahua.coffee. Folks, thank you so much for tuning into this episode of iOS Today. Looking forward to next week. But until then, it is time to say goodbye. Go out, go forth, and create with Final Cut Pro and Logic Pro on your iPads. Goodbye.
Bye, folks.
Hey, folks, I'm Ant Pruitt. And what do you get your favorite tech geek that has everything? A Club Twit gift subscription, of course. Twit podcasts keep them informed and entertained with the most relevant tech news podcasts available. With the Club Twit subscription, they get access to all of our podcasts ad-free. They also get access to our members-only Discord, access to exclusive outtakes, behind-the-scenes, and special content such as AMAs, which I just love hosting, plus exclusive shows such as Hands on Mac, Hands on Windows, and the Untitled Linux Show. Purchase your geek's gift at twit.tv/clubtwit, and it will thank you every day.